Today's show is all about local elections. Anyone who pays much attention to election results as they come out year by year knows that, well, we don't always have the highest voter turnout for our local elections here on the Kenai Peninsula Borough. And so today, happy to have with us in the studio a lot of folks who are looking into the notion of how to increase voter turnout for local elections. There's a stakeholders group happening right now at the borough level. We'll be discussing that here over the course of the hour, but I want to get to our guests in the studio this morning. Just go right down the line. Very happy to have with us this morning, Johnny Blankenship is the borough clerk for the Kenai Peninsula Borough. Good morning, Johnny.
Good morning.
And Brenda Ahlberg is with us, also with the borough and a member of the Election Stakeholders Committee. Thanks for being here, Brenda.
Good morning.
And Brent Hibbert with us, also on the committee and a member of the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly as well. Good morning, Brent. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
And again, we'll just get the numbers out here right now. If you have any questions, comments, ideas, notions about voter turnout, elections in general here on the Kenai Peninsula, 283-8414 is our number if you'd like to jump in on the conversation this morning. Again, 283-8414. And just to get started on this, I wanted to kind of back up a little bit and take a little bit broader view because, Johnny, I know that in getting this election stakeholders group started here on at the local level, at the borough level, before that there was some work done at the state level to take a look at voter turnout, election numbers, these sorts of things. And maybe you could tell us a little bit about what some of those broader statewide efforts were like and how those sort of translated down to what's happening here in Kenai.
Thank you. Yes, I would love that opportunity. So under the Walker administration, there was an effort with the election policy work group that was facilitated by the prior director of elections, Josie Bonnke. And that effort was filled with many members of all different stakeholders. And the group looked at our current challenges at a state level for elections. We looked at rural versus urban. We looked at disabled, ADA kind of compliant issues. We looked at voter turnout. We looked at language barriers. We looked at all of the above. And the group narrowed down essentially an effort to introduce legislation to look at a hybrid of elections. So essentially, everybody in the state would be mailed a ballot. However, they would also have other options. So they would have voting centers. Along with that came the Dunleavy administration, and the group got put on hold. However, there is an effort to resurrect that.
So this is interesting in thinking about what some of the challenges are, because I know, you know, from my experience in voting, and I think probably for a lot of people's experience in voting, it's generally kind of a cut and dried affair for the most part, but that's not universally the case. That's not the case for everything, for everyone. And especially when we look at, as you were talking about, the differences between rural and urban areas and some of the facilities that might be available and those sorts of things, there become a lot of these challenges. Maybe you could, Brenda or Johnny or Brent, anyone jump in and talk about what are some of those challenges or limitations and things that are being looked at then here on the peninsula? What are some, I know there's some issues that were raised in Homer, for instance. If anybody wants to jump in,
I can take that.
Yeah.
So the Kenai Peninsula Borough currently uses the optical scan units that are owned by the state of Alaska. And that is the tabulator that most folks are familiar with when they go to the polls that they insert their voted ballot into. And then at the end of the night, those are tabulated. The state of Alaska, when they have their elections every other year, every even-numbered year, they also use what's called a touchscreen machine, which is part of the Help America Vote Act, which also included federal funding, which the state of Alaska did receive. However, the Kenai Peninsula Borough did not. And even though we use their optical scan equipment, we cannot use their touchscreen equipment because it has to be sent back from during the primary prior to the general for it to be reprogrammed. And since our election is in between there, there's no ability for us to use that. So we did come across an issue in 2014 where a gentleman went into the Homer polling location during the primary, was able to use the touchscreen machine, and then went in for the local election in October and did not have access to that machine, and was frustrated by that process.
And as anyone could imagine, you would expect that however you vote in one place for one election, you would tend to expect that same process wouldn't change the next time around that you go to vote. So, you know, we're talking about some of these bigger issue things and technology issues, which I think maybe isn't a big surprise. When we hear about the way voter, I'm thinking about, you know, like big national headlines, and we see these problems with voting machines and all this kind of stuff. Maybe not such a big surprise that there are some technological hurdles, and especially when we're talking about elections happening at a state level versus a local level, there's even a bigger gap in the logistics of, you mentioned having to reprogram machines in between elections. That's kind of a big deal to have to rejigger things like that.
It is a very big deal. And it's these machines that we're talking about, they weigh 70 pounds. And the state of Alaska ships them back and forth to all of their polling locations. So when you're looking at the state, you're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars of shipping for these huge touchscreen machines. And the borough, they just can't compete with that.
Yeah.
So, of course, we're looking at new technology to be able to meet all the needs of all the voters.
Yeah, maybe that's a good place to get into the local stakeholders group. As you're looking at some of these issues and then potentially some of the solutions, I have to imagine that a big part of it, even at the very beginning when you're just floating out ideas, some of it has to be, I would imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, the finances of it. Some of these issues are solved with some new method or some new piece of technology that's perhaps more affordable than another piece of technology. I'm sure there's a huge range of options out there, but you know, what's workable for us here on the Kenai is very unique and taking a lot of time. Maybe Brent or Brenda, you could talk a little bit about how that conversation is going and how, you know, how are you identifying some of the different issues across the peninsula? Who's throwing their two cents in with this committee?
I would say, just coming back to that broader picture, that we are guided by 8 principles per resolution that establish the framework and what we should be considering, how we should even potentially subset each one of those guiding principles. That includes finance, as well as 7 others. I can't rattle them all off at once, but I think it's helped keep us within some solid talking points. Human nature is we want to solve it.
Right.
And at this broad perspective, we need to make recommendations, if that helps.
Well, yeah, and I'm curious, you know, you mentioned having a pretty specific framework of things to address and maybe how to address them. What have some of those conversations been like? We've had several meetings now of the election mm-hmm. stakeholders group. How are those meetings going? What are some of the things that have come up?
Voter turnout,
yeah,
and also access. I think with any one of the guiding principles, it's been understanding and providing opportunity for our voters, our residents, to understand the process from different perspectives. For example, the voting machines. Even I have learned the intense protocol preparing each one of those with an audit team each time there is a vote, and for each machine is impressive to ensure accuracy. Most folks, just as this gentleman who was not able to provide or have the same type of voting experience at the local level, people don't understand we don't have access to that equipment. So what can we do as a potential recommendation to ensure voter participation from that hybrid opportunity, whether it is a machine or a mail-in ballot? So those are several of the things that we keep coming back to.
Yeah, and Brent, having sat in on a few of these meetings, what are you hearing as folks' sort of concerns or maybe ideas and ways to address this or things that they're thinking about as we look at some of these issues?
Well, we have a great shareholders group. They're engaged and lots of great ideas coming out. I want to thank the election workers because we did find out one thing, that they work very, very hard, and it's for one day and it's long hours. And in some of the different ways of voting, like by mail that Anchorage did, they went from 600 election workers down to 60. So we're cutting the workforce, and it's getting harder and harder every day to find those people to help do this.
Is that a paying gig to be an election worker?
A little.
You may want to define paying. It's the maximum is like $10 an hour.
So largely it's a volunteer effort and a little thank you and grab some lunch on us kind of thing.
And they do such a great job to get the results out within just a few hours after the election's over.
Oh yeah, and believe I'm certainly one of those people who's here at, you know, 10, 11 o'clock at night hitting refresh on my computer screen over and over and over maybe that's I guess from a news perspective and just getting some information out to the public, lower voter turnout hastens that a little bit, but that's not necessarily what you want to see, is very few people voting, and it's easy to get those numbers counted and tabulated and out to the public. You'd rather see it take a little while because there is a lot of voter turnout. And I did want to get to that a little bit and just to sort of frame what we're talking about when we talk about voter engagement and turnout and those sorts of things. I mean, traditionally, and I'm thinking since I've been here the last not quite 10 years, I can't think of anything that was much over 30% voter turnout for any one election. Can you think of maybe what's the highest number, Johnny, or ballpark it?
There was definitely an election that drew more voters most recently. And yeah, that was for the marijuana question. And we may have gotten to 30%, but that would only be in some precincts, certainly not all of them.
And that's an interesting thing too, is it depends very much what's on the ballot as to what, you know, that influences turnout a huge amount, and maybe we can get into that a little bit more. But as we're having these conversations with the stakeholders group, I'd be curious to know why people don't vote. Is that a question that's being addressed on any level? Brenda's shaking her head, yeah.
Absolutely. We've looked at how do we compile, even anecdotally, demographics so that we can reach out to the general public for those education messaging, whether it's the 18-year-old or the 80-year-old, and what is it that they need to hear to understand the importance of their civic duty and keep them engaged.
And, I mean, is it an access thing? Is it it's a pain to drive into town thing? Is it, I'm just disengaged and don't have an opinion thing? Are we zeroing into individual specific reasons, or is it a little more broad at this point?
I believe it's broad. I think
we
have lives and people are busy and they just, it's one of those things that they may not or may want to do.
Well, I'm curious, you know, Brent, having run an election and won an election and definitely been engaged with voters on an individual basis, as a candidate, what did you learn about voter turnout? Did you learn anything about voter turnout? Did you talk to folks who were engaged with the process and knew what was going on but couldn't make time? Did you get any thoughts from that angle of it?
No, I didn't. I think it's up in the air. Everybody has different feelings on it, and they don't have time, and some have time, and it don't matter if it's young or old. I see it all across the board.
Yeah. Again, talking about elections and voter turnout and some ways to address some of those things here on the Kenai Peninsula, there's an election stakeholders group that's currently meeting and will be meeting for a few more months and coming up with some recommendations and maybe some changes that we could be looking forward to. Johnny Blankenship is joining us this morning. She's the borough clerk for the Kenai Peninsula Borough. Brenda Ahlberg also with us from the borough. She's a committee member with that election stakeholders group, as is Brent Hibbert. He's also a member of the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly. 283-8414 is the number if you'd like to jump in on the conversation this morning, have some thoughts or ideas about elections and how those things are run here on the Kenai. Would love to hear from you this morning. Again, 283-8414. And when I was thinking about elections and some of the things that we hear in the news about counting ballots and that sort of thing, something that we talked a little bit about technology and how that's changing and some of the challenges there. How realistic is it at this point in 2019 to go back to paper ballots? Is that really an option on any level? And especially when you're thinking about ways that folks can vote and try to increase voter turnout, is spinning the clock back from a technological standpoint really any sort of a consideration? I mean, it seems a bit simpler and perhaps a bit more cost effective to get rid of, you mentioned the extreme shipping costs of these heavy computers and all this sort of thing. Is it easier to go back to a simpler time?
So let me just clarify that we still use a paper ballot.
Right.
As
far as tabulation goes, yeah. That can I hanging Chad? Was that the term?
That was a term. Yes. So at this point, I'm not personally going to be comfortable with anything other than a paper ballot.
Yeah.
To be able to fall back on, and you know, technology has its strengths, but it also has its weaknesses, and so. Bottom line is, if we had some reason why technology didn't work for us, we still have human beings that can count ballots.
And so does that take online voting off the table, do you think?
Yes and no. Online voting is not a thing that actually takes place. It actually is kind of a hybrid, again, use of that word, because essentially the state of Alaska and the municipality of Anchorage are both mailing out a ballot online. They will email you your ballot, and then you have to print everything off and mail it back in. So it's not the true essence of an online voting system, which isn't a system that's actually been certified in the United States yet.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm curious, Brent, from your viewpoint on the assembly, thinking about what is the borough's role in trying to increase voter turnout? I mean, where's that line between, promoting civic activism and responsible citizenship and those sorts of things? And then is there a line beyond that where, well, now we're getting into ballot measures, and does the borough want to lobby for itself on this, that, or the other thing? Do you see lines like that when it comes to this from a borough standpoint?
Well, I don't think that the borough has a reason to get involved in that part of it. The clerks are doing a great job of running these elections, and that is part of the borough. But as far as the assembly, I think we'll make the decision on one way or the other on which direction we want to go, and that'll be enough.
Johnny, I'm curious, speaking of the clerk's office, which I would be curious to know a little bit about the mechanics of how your office runs in terms of preparing for an election, some of the steps involved, and how you execute that whole process. Because I don't even know, when do you start preparing for an election? Say it's the regular October elections, when do you start getting ready for that?
We start in July. So July 1st is our kickoff for
election
season.
As the fiscal year starts over, okay.
Yeah, so we start getting everything ready in July for our candidates, so that come August 1st, we've got candidate paperwork all across the borough ready for those folks who want to apply for those seats.
So it starts by getting just information compiled, and then how long? And then there's a deadline to get all that information out to voters for, again, just sort of generically a general October election. And then how long does it take to get everything put, organizing volunteers and that sort of thing to actually have things set up and ready to go on election day?
Yeah, July, August, September, we wrap it up in October. And I would definitely say, since you touched on it, that one of the biggest tasks we have is recruitment. It is every year a super challenge to find people who are willing to work for $9.50 an hour for 16 hours.
Yeah, it is. It's a pretty relentless day, and especially depending on exactly which precinct you're involved with, it can be an absolutely relentless day in some areas. Have you heard from election workers as a part of the stakeholders group about sort of inside baseball, what they think, being the folks who are boots on the ground and spend all day every election day doing this? Have you heard from them?
We do have some that are on the committee,
yeah.
Which has been invaluable to have their perspective as well.
And what are they kind of talking about? What is that? What are they? Could you sort of encapsulate that perspective a little bit?
Well, from what I've heard,
right.
my interpretation
right.
is the extreme ownership and value of accuracy, which I greatly appreciate. They take it very, very seriously, and they stand behind everything that they do. That's important to me as a voter.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about how quick it, or sort of the turnaround time to get election results out, and I'm as soon as the polls close, this is I'm sitting so often here, you know, a lot of times behind in this very chair behind the board waiting for those results to come out. Could you describe a little bit of what the scene is like at the borough building when those results are coming in? Are they coming physically in? I mean, boxes of paper into the borough building, right?
No, they're actually not. They're coming in over the phone lines.
Okay.
And they're being transmitted from the polling locations. And they're being sent to a central computer, and it's actually relatively calm.
which is really kind of ironic, because anyone else who was involved in the election, and even the voters who participated in the election, are a lot of times... It's a very tense time, but pretty calm for the clerk at that one moment.
At that one moment, yes. We have our little bubble that we just stay within and just get our work done.
Very good. Again, Johnny Blankenship with us this morning. She's the clerk for the Kenai Peninsula Borough. Brenda Ahlberg with us as well. She's on the committee with the Election Stakeholders Group. And so is Brent Hibbard, also a member of the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly, talking all about elections and how that whole process works, how that whole machine runs here on the Kenai Peninsula, and perhaps some ways to do it better and get some more folks involved. If you have some ideas on that, 283-8414 is the number. Again, 283-8414. We'd love to get you in on the conversation this morning as well. We were talking about a lot of the sort of the, I guess, maybe stipulations is not necessarily the right word, but there are a lot of regulations that you have to pay attention to, and we will talk about those here in a minute after we go to the phones. Good morning. Welcome to the conversation. Who's this?
This is Holly.
Good morning, Holly. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Am I on the radio?
Yes, you are. Welcome to the conversation.
Oh, it's so smooth now. Hey, Brenda, it's Holly. I just wanted to make a suggestion. That would just be so helpful. There's two slope workers in this family, and the single thing that could be done to help the situation is to just give more time for the absentee ballot time frame, you know, be able to vote sooner, because you can't imagine how many times, you know, it's 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, and it's just very difficult to make sure that they have the opportunity to vote. I also want to mention that Johnny's great. You know, they can send the, you know, deal with the people up on the slope, but on the slope side, it's not so easy sometimes. You know, the internet's not so good. Bosses don't really necessarily think that's, you know, time well spent. So the single most thing that could be done would be to give more time for absentee balloting or getting in to vote in person. That's all.
And Holly, I have a quick follow-up for you. Have you ever been in a situation where you missed a deadline or maybe came awfully close because of that big difference in space there, trying to get stuff in from the North Slope?
Most definitely. I mean, not me personally, but I do have my husband's, of course, very good about voting, as we are. We're the kind that vote for dog catcher. But, you know, you want to get the young people involved. And they're often in contract positions up there. They're not yet with a major. They're trying to impress everybody. Making sure that you get the time. And they all have their own services up there. You know, it's not like you've got GCI or something. So, it has been a problem in the past, and I do think a vote or two has been missed simply because it wasn't as easy as it should be, and I think we should be doing everything we can to get these young people engaged. So simply making a longer time to, you know, for those absentee ballots to be available, and then, you know, just what, instead of, it's like a week or two, just make it a month. That would be extremely helpful.
Very good. Thanks for that call, Holly. And I'll turn it over to our panel to kind of address that, this notion of absentee ballots and extending that window and giving folks who are coming and going and aren't just planted ready and waiting for the election every time around, giving them a little more time. Has that been part of this discussion so far? Anybody wants to jump in?
Absolutely. So maximizing accessibility is number one on our list. And of course, the clerk in me wants to fix everything for her right now because I have this whole everything figured out as to how we can solve the problem. But definitely, you know, thinking about a longer absentee period, actually maybe considering letting people know that they can be put on a permanent absentee list so that their ballots are just automatically mailed to them. In our current process, that's available. And then, of course, you know, the committee is looking at the hybrid, which would be a by-mail and vote center system. So that may solve the problem.
Yeah. And is there, legally, is there a limit to how early ballots can be sent out? Or is that just a logistical thing when all the information is finally compiled? I mean, you meet the deadlines to be filed as a candidate and so on and so forth. And as soon as that's done, it's out. And it really can't be any earlier than that, right?
So our code is specific to 2 weeks prior, but our code can be changed. We have an assembly member right here.
I can see him. He's scratching out that proposed ordinance right now, right?
That's right.
Well, and that's actually, I'm glad you brought that up, how this works in with the assembly, because we're not there yet. We don't know exactly what this stakeholders group is going to come up with, but maybe you could talk a little bit about what the end process will look like, if not in specific detail, at least sort of the framework of what we're going for and what this thing might potentially look like at the end. If anybody wants to jump in on that one.
I'm happy to address it. So the vision is that we would have a report and with our recommendations to the assembly in August, and hopefully an assembly member at that point would be interested in sponsoring an ordinance to move things forward.
Holly mentioned youth engagement, and I should throw out the numbers again, 283-8414. If you have some ideas like Holly did and would like to share them on the conversation this morning, 283-8414. Talked about youth engagement, and is there any part of this stakeholders group that's engaging with the schools and getting down to that level to talk to kids who are maybe not quite yet voting age, but very near it and might be paying attention to these things? Are they part of the conversation?
We actually addressed that at the last meeting, the importance of engaging our youth and at what level and at which venues. So yes, very much an important part of the process that we need to continue to engage them and how we go about doing it in the future.
Because I'm trying to think back to when I was roughly that age, and I don't recall specifically anything that had to do, it's not like anybody rolled in a voting machine and said, here's how you do it, here's what a ballot looks like. And I wonder if things like that wouldn't be helpful, because the first time you vote, it feels like, at least for me, it was, I don't want to say an intimidating thing, but it was a strange building I'd never been in before with machines that I'd never seen before, and I'm making this decision and you only get one shot at it and all these things. And would it help to maybe disarm that a little bit and make it a bit more approachable, I think is the word that you use, Johnny. Is that maybe something that's Brent, you got some ideas there?
Absolutely. I wish that we would teach more of the real life stuff in school. Voting, I think it's huge, and we need to be informing our youth of this.
Just some basic civics kinds of things.
Basic civics.
Yeah. Yeah, very interesting. Again, 283-8414 is the number, talking all about elections, voter turnout, those sorts of things here on the Kenai Conversation this morning. And we've kind of had some glancing blows talking about this hybrid system and the idea of a mail-in option and also an in-person option. But maybe we could go into a little bit more detail of how what a hybrid voting system is, maybe. Are there other places that have deployed this and seen some good results? And what do we know about it?
Go ahead,
Johnny.
So the group is looking at both the traditional polling location concept, and they're also looking at the hybrid system. And the hybrid system is something that the municipality of Anchorage essentially does. And they've just conducted their third election using this system. And what it is that every registered voter would receive their ballot in the mail. And I think they are doing like 3 weeks prior. And then 2 weeks prior, they also open voting centers for folks who either are not registered correctly, are not registered at all, have some issue with not receiving their ballot by mail, or for those folks who just prefer to vote in person. It kind of gives them the best of all worlds.
And has there been any, I mean, three elections isn't a huge sample size, but are there any numbers in terms of turnout that have been come up with yet for Anchorage? Do we know if it's done anything to increase turnout?
I know that the first election was very successful as far as turnout. I'm not sure about the numbers for the special election or for this most recent election. And I think Brent he mentioned 28%.
Yeah, that's what I saw on the news last night. It was a little over 28% turnout last night.
And is there any concern when I hear about multiple options as a way to cast a ballot? How do you safeguard against somebody mailing in a ballot and then showing up to vote too? I mean, what are the safeguards against that? I'm sure that they're baked into the system, but what are they?
How much time do we have? So we actually have a pretty extensive audit trail, and we look at every ballot as far as like absentee ballots or by mail ballots, question ballots, special needs ballots. So those are ballots that are cast in a different way outside of the traditional polling location. And so if you go, for example, if you went to your polling site and voted on election day, signed the register, and then the election, you know, unofficial results are uploaded, and then we get all that information back at Election Central, the clerk's office. We also then look at every absentee ballot that is cast, either in person or by mail, or any of those other provisional exceptions. And before we even consider them, we compare them against the register to make sure you also didn't sign the register. If you signed the register and you also cast an absentee ballot or a provisional ballot, you get the naughty letter from me that says, hey, I think you might have double voted. And we don't count the second one. So, the first one we can't stop because it went through the machine.
Right.
But we've had examples of people who have voted by mail and also voted absentee in person, and neither one of them counted.
Yeah. And I guess we hear at the national level, to kind of zoom out a little bit more, maybe than you're all prepared for, we hear about the idea of voter fraud and different laws being proposed or not proposed based on the potential for voter fraud. And you were just talking about people, there being some cases of people casting more than one ballot in a different form. But is it a huge issue here? Do you run into that? I mean, more than a handful of times in a given election, or really at all?
We typically have about three or four every year. And every year it is because of voter confusion. There's no malice intent.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like I mean, not to downplay the importance of our local government and the things that everyone does, but it seems like kind of small potatoes to try to commit voter fraud on any kind of an effectual scale here on the Kenai Peninsula. Maybe that's just me being a little bit cynical. Anyway, Johnny Blankenship with us this morning here on the Kenai Conversation. She's the borough clerk and helping run an election stakeholders group looking into voter turnout, how to increase some of those numbers. Brenda Ahlberg also with us. She's on that committee as well, as is Brent Hibbert, and also a member of the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly. 283-8414 is the number. If you'd like to jump in on the conversation this morning, we'd love to hear from you as well. If you have thoughts, notions, ideas about how the voting process works here on the Kenai, again, 283-8414. And in talking about a hybrid system, I guess, what is there any gauge as in terms of what the appetite is for adding technology to make any I guess, how does technology play a role in increasing voter turnout, or does it play a role in increasing voter turnout? Which is to say, if there were screens there for people to tap on, would you be more likely to get young folks in to vote? I mean, I can't imagine whether or not it's a paper ballot turns people away, but are these questions that are being asked in terms of turnout? Anybody have any thoughts? Or just in general, what are the questions being asked about how to increase voter turnout? What's come up?
Accountability has been a big one. And I think, again, coming back to understanding the election process, and people want to be reassured that it is a secure system, whether it's going to be engaging additional technology or the understanding that there will always be a paper ballot for accountability. So I'd say that's been one of our biggest topics as well.
Is the accountability factor and people just wanting to know that however they vote, it's a secure and...
It's a secure system, absolutely.
I guess that I'm trying to decide if I'm surprised or not by that idea that there would be some nervousness about introducing technology into the system. I guess I wonder if there's a generational line there, maybe would be a way to kind of frame it up. The idea that if you're a little bit younger, perhaps you're more open to the idea of an online thing that makes it easier and you can vote from anywhere, anytime in a given period. Or if you're over a certain age, maybe you don't trust that quite as much because it's not as familiar and you are well aware that there are bugs in that system. I don't know. Do we see that sort of generational divide? Is that anything that's sort of come up?
I wouldn't say so much a generational divide as coming back to security, knowing that it's going to be counted accurately and that anything that isn't will be purged accordingly. And even as a stakeholder, I've learned the value of that paper ballot because it represents that human action and it can be traceable back to its origin. And that's invaluable regardless of what technology takes over.
Yeah. And go ahead, Johnny.
Just inject that it's voter satisfaction and confidence. And it's definitely something that we want to worry about for the voter. But as an election official, I always want to make sure that my candidates are also happy with the level of administration that took place for those elections, because as an election official, the word challenge is not something we encourage. And so we always want to make sure that those candidates also have that level of comfort.
Very good. And it looks like we've got another caller on the line. Good morning. Welcome to the conversation. Who's this?
Hi. My name is Peggy Mullen, and I'm just calling to totally support the idea of a paper ballot, which, you know, we read occasionally about mistakes being made on entirely computerized systems throughout the U.S., and we've read about, you know, the guys hunkered down in the Ukraine somewhere trying to break into states' computer systems. So I think to have the comfort of knowing that there is a paper ballot that could be recounted if necessary makes it much easier for me to be a confident voter, with knowing that there won't be any sort of malware invasion of any sort. And so I think young people who want to tap on a screen, if there's a way to get a paper ballot out of that in the end, that's the only safeguard we have, really. So thanks for all the work the clerk's office does. We appreciate it. Thank you.
And thank you for that call, Peggy, very much. And Brenda, just as you were talking about right before Peggy called in, accountability again, and very much folks wanting to see a visible trace, something we can physically put our hands on and count. This is one vote for this issue or this person, that sort of thing. Yeah, very interesting that's, I guess I wouldn't, it's, again, I'm trying to decide if I'm surprised or not that's one of the things that people are first concerned about. It's not how easy it is to get to the polls or what the ballots look like or the actual engagement. It's the accountability factor of it. Yeah. Again, tune to the Kenai Conversation this morning here on KDLL. 283-8414 is the number if you'd like to jump in on our talk this morning, all about the election stakeholders group that is convening currently within the Kenai Peninsula Borough, looking at how to expand voter turnout. I want to try to look into some of those, maybe not necessarily the numbers here in a minute, but before we do that, we'll go back to the phones. Good morning. You are on The Conversation. Who's this? Good morning.
Good morning. This is Carol. I just wanted to make two comments. One, in the discussion about making changes to the borough code, just to inform other folks that changes to the borough code can also affect city elections, which are held simultaneously with the borough elections, and vice versa. And also, that ballots can be mailed, faxed, provided earlier, all those things. But in the end, the voter has a responsibility to learn ahead what they can do to receive their ballots and work with their schedules, both the city and the borough. Thanks.
And thank you for that call, Carol. And Carol brings up a good point. We hadn't really talked about this. We're talking about this very much so from a borough perspective, but the interaction with the other municipalities within the borough, and maybe, Johnny, you could talk a little bit about that, about does this process do anything to address issues within a municipality or change anything on that level?
Yeah, thank you. And thank you, Carol. I know exactly who you are. We, part of our stakeholders group is made up of the city managers from all the municipalities within the Kenai Peninsula Borough. So we have city manager representation, we have city council representation, and all of the clerks are part of the expert staff that's there at every meeting. So it is definitely in collaboration with all the jurisdictions within the Kenai Peninsula Borough.
Are there ways in which you see that, you know, all the municipalities, you know, City of Kenai, City of Soldotna, Kenai Peninsula Borough, are there ways to collaborate on this, whether it be through purchase of technology to have those things here locally? What are some of the potential options for collaboration to make all this sort of one unified system across the Kenai, whether you're in the city, out of the city, or somewhere in between?
Honestly, I don't know that there's any limit to those collaborations. I think that we, as a group, that is one of our goals, is to collaborate and cost share and, share that administrative responsibility. I already collaborate with some of the cities, but to expand that to all of them and to, you know, work together to administer these elections to make it easier for the voter, kind of a one-stop shop kind of concept, is exactly where we would like to get, I believe.
Yeah, just again, I'm interested in this idea of trying to make it easier, because once you've been through the process of voting, it's kind of easy. But again, thinking about, you know, increasing youth voter turnout, getting over that first trip through the polls is kind of an interesting journey, and one that, again, I wonder, you know, what is the role of the borough in trying to make that happen, or the role of the schools in trying to make that happen? And as one of our callers pointed out, what is the role of that happening just as a generational thing within the home? It's sort of the parents' duty to, here's how we vote, kids. Let's gather up every October and go do this civic duty. Mm-hmm. 283-8414 is the number if you would like to jump in on the conversation this morning, all about local elections, voter turnout, and how to increase some of those numbers, get a few more people out to the polls to help make decisions for us here on the Kenai Peninsula. Johnny Blankenship joining us this morning live in the studio. She's the clerk for the Kenai Peninsula Borough. Brenda Ahlberg also with us. She's a committee member on that election stakeholders group, also with the borough, and Brent Hibbert with us as well, assembly member for District 1. Yes. All right. Make sure I got my district map straight in my head. And again, 283-8414 is the number if you would like to jump in as well. I want to come back again. We talked a little bit about different ways to kind of reach out and engage youth more actively, but I guess I'm still kind of hung up on again, thinking about how far is the government entity's responsibility in promoting voter turnout? You know, how much money is it appropriate to spend? These are all questions that we'll get to down the road. But are these the kinds of questions that maybe, Brent, are these the kinds of questions that you anticipate sort of looking at an assembly level, down the road?
Absolutely. I think we're going to have to do something. Get pamphlets out, how it works, why it works well, why it's important to get out and vote, and so your voice is heard.
In talking about voter turnout more broadly, Johnny, I don't know how well versed you are sort of in national numbers or national trends. Are there magical pockets of the country where turnout is high and there are discernible reasons that we can figure out why that is, or is turnout not so high lots of places? I mean, every 4 years we get a sense of voter turnout from a presidential election, and maybe you're encouraged by those numbers, maybe you're not. But are there any places in the country that are just doing a whiz-bang job and darn near everybody shows up?
Honestly, I'm not familiar with those numbers. I do know that Washington and Oregon and Colorado, which are all bimail states, do have better voter turnout than the traditional polling locations. But as we kind of alluded to earlier, it is agenda-driven. What's on the ballot? That's what gets people out. And I think it would be amazing if we could engage people no matter what's on the ballot. We could just get them to be part of that buy-in and to be engaged, because engaged citizens, it's just good for everybody.
Yeah.
I would like to come back to comments that were made regarding costs and also voter turnout.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where Johnny needs to step in and correct me if I'm completely off base. But our voter registration, the way it's updated or purged, seems very archaic to me. So is our percentage a true representation of the turnout? To me, it isn't. Because if I understand correctly, it's done by statute, the way it has to be purged. And someone may have been out of the state for years, it's still on their voter registration list. So then that tells me two things. If it were purged annually, that gives us a better representation of who is, as well as who isn't voting. And I think that would be curious to understand that those data sets. Am I way off there, Johnny?
No, not at all. And the state of Alaska is working really hard to clean up those roles, but there is some statutory limitations to essentially how often they can purge folks. And we do have the automatic voter registration with the PFD now. We also are in collaboration with a group called ERIC, which aligns electronic registration for, it does a comparison between the state of Alaska's voter registration database and other states to try to determine if there's folks that are registered in both places, because they're, you know, while there is some collaboration with counties, you know, states do it differently. We have a state that handles that. Other folks have counties that handle that. So unless we're informed that that person is now registered in that county, we don't purge them. And there is quite a litmus test for pulling somebody off of those polls.
Yeah, that's interesting that you bring that up, because I'm going to guess that most people, if they were told sort of about the disconnect between whether it be a borough or a county and this state versus that state, a pretty big disconnect into how elections are administered and how the roles are handled and all those sorts of things. I'm sure it's probably pretty difficult maybe to communicate with other states and other governmental entities about, is this person registered here, there, the other thing? Are those some challenges?
Those are definite challenges, but I definitely think the state of Alaska has gone leaps and bounds in the last couple of years to try to, that's on the forefront of what they're trying to accomplish. It's priority one is to get those registers to be cleaned up, but it does take a long time to purge somebody from the rolls.
Well, could you touch on that a little bit? Because again, you know, that's something that we hear about, especially as national elections get closer and closer. We hear a lot about purging voter rolls and what impact that would have, you know, on this candidate or that candidate. It's a lengthy process, and you mentioned it being, there's a lot of litmus tests to do it, but maybe you could kind of explain how do you get yourself off the voter rolls and take some time? And
so the one thing that I would recommend for anybody that's listening is, if you no longer live in the state of Alaska, or if you have a friend who that you know no longer lives in the state of Alaska and is voting somewhere else, that they would just let the state of Alaska know that they are re-registered somewhere else. And they may have already determined that. They may have collaborated with that county or that state and figured that out. But I think there is that accountability factor.
Yeah, because there's no way that if I tomorrow move to Arkansas and register to vote there. There's nothing in that process that triggers election folks here in Alaska that I'm registered somewhere else and that I have moved and that I'm no longer going to be voting there and I won't be coming back. And a lot to consider that kind of falls between the cracks, which is interesting when you think about voting. But I guess maybe that's, again, why we think about accountability first and foremost on some of these things. 283-8414 is the number. We've got just a few minutes left here on the Kenai Conversation. If you have some thoughts, notions, ideas about elections or voter turnout and how to increase some of those numbers here on the Kenai Peninsula, your experience participating in elections, perhaps, 283-8414. Johnny Blankenship with us this morning. She's the clerk for the Kenai Peninsula Borough. Brenda Ahlberg also with us, a committee member with the Election Stakeholders Group. She's with the borough as well. And joining us also is Brent Hibbert, a committee member on that Election Stakeholders Group and also an assembly member, to talk about some of the political, perhaps, outcomes of what we expect to do here. In terms of a time frame, when are we hoping to have some work wrapped up with the stakeholders group and have some ideas into a report that folks can get a look at?
August is when we will be bringing before the assembly. But currently, if you go to the borough's webpage, to the clerk subpage, there is the work group's page, the election stakeholders group page, and it provides the minutes and all the documentation that was discussed.
Yeah, that's a wealth of information. You can go back and you can listen to those meetings as well through that website. And I'm curious, you know, I haven't had time to actually sit in on any of the meetings yet, and I hope to do so, because I'm sure that there's a lot of interesting stuff going through, and especially now that there have been some meetings kind of under the belt a little bit, and you've got some idea of how this group is going to interact and some ideas that are moving back and forth. Has there been a meeting where there's been like some sort of big jump and, okay, this is something we really need to look into, this is something that would really make sense here? Johnny's shaking her head yes. We've had some ideas that might maybe have a little more traction than others. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think at our last meeting, we really kind of dissected our guiding principles and really tried to throw kind of everything out there and figure out where it should land, and trying to just anticipate all the potential needs and all the potential questions, and talked about, you know, of course, being cost efficient is, you know, always on the forefront of a public entity. And so one of the perspectives that we kind of looked at was maybe shifting the way we think about the cost. And maybe instead of looking at an overall cost, start looking at it as a cost per voter. And that may have been a moment where we kind of went, oh.
That is interesting, because then all of a sudden, as you increase voter turnout, that investment you've made to do that in whatever means you've decided, the more voters you have, it brings that cost per voter down. That is interesting as a different way to look at it. Are there other ideas that have come up as sort of ways to look at this more broadly and that are maybe a change from the norm?
And just to couch on that, that's what I wanted to bring up with cost, is that was an epiphany for me, that we should look at it per voter, because that is our mission, is to create voter engagement. And I don't think we should put a cost to that. If we are going to encourage folks to come out and vote, then let's do it by all means possible. The other thing that I've heard since I've been on the stakeholders group, that was whatever, regardless of what the opinion, the intent of that person's statement was, is the comment, voting by mail will never fly here on the peninsula. And what I want to share is, we already have how many precincts that vote by mail?
Six.
Six out of all of our precincts. And that is because they're not on the road system, or for whatever reason, it's created an efficiency both for that community that allows them to vote by mail. And it's, in a sense, already a hybrid system that's worked very well here on the peninsula. So why not expound and improve upon to provide opportunities for voters?
Yeah. Mentioning the website for the election stakeholders group, there's a portal to submit written comments to the stakeholders group. And I'm curious, have you gotten some feedback through that avenue? Not a whole lot?
Nothing yet. And we really would like to encourage the public to get involved in this at this level.
But I guess just to kind of close out, we could go down the line and just briefly talk about maybe what you're hoping to see out of this election stakeholders group, what you would hope might be included in that final report that would be up for consideration a little bit later. Brent, any ideas on what you'd like to see happen?
Well, I'd like to see engagement from the voters. That's number one. And something, a better process. To get out to vote. I would like to encourage people to come and be engaged in these meetings that we're having. The next meeting's on Friday at 10 o'clock, and the public is welcome, and we would love to hear from somebody. We haven't had anybody show up yet, but we'd like to see that happen.
And Brenda, how about you? What's anything that you'd kind of like to see in the final shape of this thing, or anything you're kind of pushing in these meetings?
I would like to see community meetings once we get down to the final draft to get input from our individual communities. I think that's important. I also appreciate those who've called in today or those that are stewing their questions now to please get onto the portal and provide us comments. And you are always welcome to call me. My number is on our website, or call the clerk's office and they'll patch you through to me.
And Johnny Blankenship, what are your thoughts on how this thing's all going to wrap up? What would you like to see come out of the end of this, out of the work of this election stakeholders group?
I'd like to see a recommendation that works for everyone, that everybody can get behind and support, and that the governing bodies on all the jurisdictions can feel like we've done our due diligence to present a recommendation that is just the best recommendation.
Well, I want to thank all of you so much for coming in and discussing this very important topic, how to get more folks involved in the political process and the voting process. Again, Johnny Blankenship, Brenda Ahlberg, Brent Hibbert with us this morning. Thank you all so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.